Sorry to be late. What we're going to try and do today is look at some of the flavors of Saturn and Jupiter and the line of consciousness between Saturn and Jupiter has often been called the line of judgment. If you spent much time in court, after a few visits, you begin to understand how very veteran judges seem to become of a specific type, one type or another. And those two types of judges seem to fall in opposite types. One kind of judge might be called liberal, but it is very dangerous to use those terms because those are politically loaded terms. And by liberal, we mean the dispensing of justice in a very generous way. The Jupiterian kind of jurist tries to get at the spirit of the law and believes that the law is merely to guide and help people who are basically good. Such a judge is usually very lenient, very generous, and very forgiving. I can remember one instance being in traffic court in San Diego, and this was the preliminary hearing. There were a lot of people in that court. The judge went through all of the cases, and he was unbelievably lenient. I remember one instance, there was a young man that was in the court, and after the first few cases, the people begin to see that they've got a very forgiving judge, and they try to take advantage of it. And so this young man was in court, and he said, Your Honor, I plead guilty. Please be merciful to me. I know I was speeding. I won't do it again. Judge is strained, but he says, your ticket is not for speeding, it's for demonstration of speed. And the young man, which means he was showing off. And the young man continues along the same line, well, I guess I was doing a little bit of showing off, but please be forgiving of me. And John said to him, well, you weren't forgiving of the arresting officer because it says on your docket here, it says that you told the arresting officer that you cops got it in for guys who drive red cars. And the guy, again, asked for innocence, asked for forgiveness. And the judge gave it to him. I could not believe how forgiving that judge was. And the case finally came up with this man that had a traffic record, as they say, as long as your arm is. He had one thing after another, after another, after another. He says, your officer, please forgive me. He says, I have an opportunity for a good job, and I won't get it if I don't have a driver's license. And the judge asked him, well, what is your profession? The guy said, I get relief. We need to say he was on welfare. You could see the judge was trying to be really compassionate to him, but it was straining every bit of forgiveness that he had because the man's record was so bad. And finally, what he said is, all right, I'll give you a suspended sentence if you go to traffic court for 3 months, and if you do not get another ticket for the next 2 years. And the man says, thank you, dear officer, but while I'm here, Can I talk about my case that comes up in 2 weeks? And the officer just hung his head, but you could see what he was going through because of all of the having to be generous. Now that's as a Jupiterian judge. The other kind of judge is usually very strict and very conservative. This is the kind of jurist that does things to the letter of the law and believes that the law is to keep people in line and to punish them if they get out of line. The judge usually believes probably that people are bad and that they'll get worse if they're not curbed. So what we're talking about here is judgment, the kind of judgment that involves deliberation. Now, if a person is intuitive, intuition is non-judgmental, and it's spiritually direct. With intuition, you can be pinpoint accurate. But at this time of our evolution, our intuition isn't that developed, even among spiritual students. And very often, we as spiritual students can't discriminate between intuition and opinion, or between intuition and emotional impulse. It's one of those things that we act on things and we think this is intuition, but it's really not. And for this reason, intuition is not allowed as admissible evidence in court. And that is rightly so. It shouldn't be that way. You know, we shouldn't try to say, well, intuitively, I believe this person is guilty, because we can't be that sure. Oh, geez. Instead of using intuition in our court system, we judge. And when we judge, our judgment is not always accurate. And as a consequence, we try to judge from information. We try to judge from what is called evidence. And we try to deliberate what motivation was or what misunderstanding was involved, but we aren't really accurate. The process of judgment has always been symbolized as Themis, the goddess of justice, who is blindfolded, and she has the scales. And that's a very good symbol, because as we deliberate, the scales go up and down. The libration means that we're trying to get closer and closer to the truth, closer and closer to what is exactly the weight of something. And that is a matter of constantly changing the parameters that we're judging by. Obviously, if we overestimate something, we're being Jupiterian. And if we underestimate something, we're looking from the Saturn point of view. And those are the two things that are involved. Jupiter is always too much. Saturn is always too little. Jupiterian people take an exaggerated view of things, and they overlook things. A Jupiterian person will often believe they can do more than they really can, while as Saturnine people, in their negation, in their doubt, in their pessimism, in their skepticism, they think they can do less than they really can, and they have caution. So Jupiter and Saturn represent the forces of expansion, the largest possible, and contraction, the smallest possible. Saturn endeavors to get things to rest on a single point. something that is controllable, something that can be manipulated. While Jupiter tries to inflate things, or dilate or enlarge things, the whole cosmos. What is being said right now is very rudimentary and basic, because in the Jupiterian character, the Saturnian character, there are many, many sub-flavors that have all kinds of meaning. We won't be able to get into all of those. But what we're going to do is look at some very simple things. For example, in performing a task, a mistaken Jupiterian might say, this is good enough. We don't need to improve this any further. And it may be a matter of overconfidence, or it may be a matter of carelessness and oversight. It might even be laziness. All of those are things that come into Jupiterian consciousness. We don't need to do anything more than this. The same task taken on by a misplaced or mistaken Saturnian, the person might be timid and afraid to ever give a passing grade to something. They might be parsimonious, thrifty, they might be careful, they might be stingy, and they might underdo the materials, but however the underdoing is, it will always be Saturnian. Both have their way, and both can be effective in the same activity. Juxtaposing the two of them results in a intentional misproportioning of things. It's still blowing around, huh? You have to be Saturnian and hang on to them. By juxtaposing the too large in relation to reality, so that there's misjudgment and exaggeration, or by juxtaposing something being too small or too little in relation to reality, can have a humorous effect. And that is the basis of humor. Humor is when things aren't like they really are. Clowns tend to exaggerate things in humor and blow them up in such a way that it's silly. On the other hand, some people use very small, witty little statements, and with that penetrate to an understanding of reality that is different. So, this is the over-underweighing practice done deliberately and intentionally for us to look at reality as it is by laughing at our misjudgment. This is the basis of this kind of understanding of humor is stated from the story of the Arabian Nights. It's a little bit bawdy, but in the Arabian Nights, which is terribly sexist, this couple is copulating. And as they're copulating, the wife feels that the husband's penis is not large enough. It's always the wife that complains in the Arabian Nights. You never hear them say that the wife's vagina isn't small enough. It's that kind of thing. And at any rate, in their emotions, they happen to rub a jug or something like that, and the genie gives them three wishes. And the first is a Jupiterian wish, the second is a Saturnian wish, and they're both misjudgments. The first wish, the wife says, make it big. And it's as big as a watermelon. And obviously that's no good. And the husband who is suffering this says, make it small. and it is made as small as a penis. And this is overdoing and underdoing. Finally, not knowing what to do and not how to correct the matter, the final wish to say, make it as it was, which is what the reality of things is. And that's the basis of that kind of humor, and that's the basis of that misjudgment. All right. There is none. Probably need the sun, which could probably see things clearly. And we have enough here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We'll have to do some sharing again, because I think there's one too little. In this case, I'm going to try to look at both classics and try to bring in a little bit of variety. It's very hard to have pure planetary types. Probably is. I believe that is the last horoscope. No, it isn't. Somebody is going to be short that horoscope. And we'll get the Paula Poundstone just yelled. And Paula Poundstone. Probably you're the one missing Paula Poundstone.
Oh, I've got these.
Oh, okay. I did this rather in a rush. All right, let's begin looking at Jupiterian people, people who do things in a big way. This is the horoscope of Andrew Carnegie, or Carnegie, I don't know. I don't know Scottish pronunciations. I would think it would be Carnegie. This is the man after whom Carnegie Hall is named, because he gave the money to have it built. Andrew Carnegie was a philanthropist, a financial philanthropist, but a philanthropist nonetheless. All right, he's a captain of industry. He is a steel magnate who owned United States Steel, and at one time he was the richest man in the world. So if we look, Scorpio is rising, which is very common to steel magnates. And the rulers of Scorpio are Mars and Pluto, and they are in a trine with each other. So this indicates that even though he was a magnate of industry, he was a fair man, but a tough man. Mars in the first, with Scorpio rising, is very common to somebody who would be involved with steel. Again, we have Mercury conjoined the ascendant and the first planet in the ascendant. So we have someone again who was a prodigy. He wasn't an academic prodigy, but he was a prodigy in practical business sense. It's not that he couldn't have been an academic prodigy, because he had an enormous curiosity for everything. He wanted to study this and this and this. And he did his childhood work in that way. They were emigres from Scotland. I think the weaving trade, when the spinning mills were built, Scotland underwent a Great Depression, because the spinning and weaving that had been done in Scotland by hand was no longer a necessary thing. You could make fine thread in spinning mills. So the family emigrated to the United States. And he was a typical Mercury rising child. He was a delivery boy. And he was a very shrewd delivery boy. It's a fixed sign in Scorpio, so there's retentive mercurial qualities there. And what he did is, when he went around delivering, he memorized the names and addresses of all of the important people. And he later used those as he became, in his business, started to be an up-and-comer. He knew the names and addresses of people, and he put that to use when he made contacts with them later on in life. This is called a dirty data horoscope, meaning to say that it is there's a little bit of guesswork in the horoscope because the very exact time of birth is not known. I am honoring the database that I'm using, and I'm using their time, but I'm almost convinced that this person was born earlier than this. Earlier, not much earlier, but a little bit earlier, because earlier would have the Sun and Mars in the second house, which would indicate the great wealth and the great wealth that was accomplished by working very hard. Earlier would have Pluto in the sixth house square to Jupiter. Jupiter represents the ideals, and if Pluto were in the sixth house, it would be that kind of thing where you use power to put down labor, even though you had ideals that organized labor was all right, because that's exactly what he did. Earlier would have Jupiter in the ninth house, the house of higher values, which really, really describes him. Even with this horoscope, he's a very generous idealist. That's indicated by all of the Sagittarian planets, which are ruled by Jupiter. Jupiter in the ninth house would magnify that greatly. Even without that positioning, Jupiter is trine to Mercury, and that indicates appreciation of intellectual values, as he loved all things intellectual. When he was a delivery boy, he would time his deliveries so that the deliveries to the theater would happen to coincide with a Shakespeare play or something like that, and he could take in the play. With Jupiter trine to Mercury, he could see the big picture of things, but he could see what were the key things that pointed that picture out. That's always the way it works with positive Jupiter-Mercury aspects. Having the big picture and being able to know the precise details that were important, he could act and take initiative very boldly, which is what the Sun and Mars would do. He would act extremely boldly. And he took very bold measures at several times in his life because he had faith in the big picture that he had, and he was always right, and this is why he became fabulously wealthy. People couldn't believe when he gave up the way of life that he had because he was going to be doing something different, and he did it because he could see that something different was going to be a big thing. Now, this is somebody that didn't care about wealth. He said he didn't care about it. And he said it's nonsense to have more wealth than you really need. This is the man, mind you, now this is the richest man in the world that says that. But he was true to his word. When he became 64, he sold everything he had. And almost all of it he gave away in philanthropy. He gave things to help people help themselves. So that Mars flavor that was with the boldness was also for helping people to help themselves to do things. For example, he gave many hundreds of millions of dollars to public libraries. In fact, most public libraries in most cities in the United States were called Carnegie Libraries until they moved to the current location. The Madison Library was called the Carnegie Library. So by the time that he passed on a few years later, he had donated 3/4 of his wealth. He had given it away, and the rest, I guess, was put into trust. This is the big picture, all right? Let's move on to the next horoscope. When we spoke about the horoscope of Renata Scotto, we mentioned that at the Met, she was booed and they were chanting for Callas. And she continued on with her aura, and when it was over, only one person gave her a standing ovation, Maria Callas. And that is generosity, Jupiterian generosity, the kind that you would expect when you find Jupiter, Sun, Ascendant, and Mercury rising in Sagittarius. Now it takes a, you know, Renata Scotto was not a big spirit. She was more of a tender coloratura. But here we have somebody that is a diva. You know, in grand opera, somebody with a grand spirit. And she was every bit of that. She was a big person. She even tall and awkward with Sagittarius rising. Jupiter makes no aspects at all, so it's actually not strong. So there might be in this character a bigness or an optimism or a positivity that really isn't based on a really strong positive faith or philosophy or anything like that. Again, we have Mercury and Sagittarius in the first house, but it did not mean any special prodigy in her childhood. It had more to do with her relationship to her mother. Her whole childhood was controlled by the relationship to the mother. Mercury is square to the sun, square to the moon, and the moon is always the mother, and it is close enough to the 10th house cusp that you can say that she was a dominating, objective parent. It's in Virgo, so it's petty. So her mother had these petty ambitions and pushed her and pushed her and pushed her because she was much too easygoing to have a career on her own. When she was done with her mother, she married a husband that was selected by her mother, who was, again, the husband is indicated by the Mercury ruling the seventh house. And he was a wealthy, older Italian entrepreneur. And it was he who continued the making of her career and turning her into a star. Now, Mercury is more concrete than the broad and the general Jupiterian Sagittarius kind of person. And so it turns out that because of all of this pressure from her mother and later her husband, she really was not strong. And what happened is she became a nail-biting neurotic. And even her bigness was not enough to overcome the neurosis that's in it. So what she did is she became a volcanically temperamental person. The sun is square to Uranus, and she would storm out of the theater, and very often may even have been laziness. She would storm out of the theater, and she wouldn't be practicing when she should. Famous temper tantrums, even on stage she had them. She eventually did find love, as we all know. She stayed married to her husband, but she had a relationship even early on, even as a child, with Aristotle Onassis. And he is not indicated by Mercury ruling the seventh house. He is indicated by Pluto, powerful. And he was at that time one of the most richest people in the world. He was in the oil tanking business. And his power and his will was a sustaining thing to her. He was the one that could calm the temperamentality, and that's indicated by the trine of Pluto to Uranus. So even though she was married, she carried on an open affair with Aristotle Onassis, but then he broke her heart by marrying Jackie Kennedy. And she died quite young, Maria Callas did, because she never overcame. She went after Jackie died, She went back, Callis went back to Ari, but it was never the same, and she basically died young because she had a broken heart. All right, let's look at the next horoscope. Does everybody know who Cesar Franck is? Maybe I ought to hold cultural literacy courses before the astrology courses. But we'll just make the astrology classes be cultural literacy courses. In the same way that there was an irony between Renata Scotto and Maria Callas, in that one was a perfectionist and had a really beautiful voice, and the other had a natural voice, but she didn't perfect it all and just was the big person. When we looked at the horoscope of Gabrielle Fauré in relationship now to César Franck, there was irony again here. Now, Fauré was trained to be a religious composer. And even though he was hired by the church and spent most of his life as a organist in the largest cathedral in Paris, he was a very worldly man. He was not religious, even anti-religious, and he had mistresses and was quite open about what the church would call immoralities. He probably would have a name of some kind of sin for it. Now, César Franck was raised by a worldly family, and he was trained to be a flashy concert pianist, a virtuoso. But he became a religious composer. In fact, he's considered to be the finest organ composer in general and the finest religious organ composer after J.S. Bach. This is an example of a religious, orthodox, Jupiterian type of character. We see the ascendant and three planets in Sagittarius. There are another three planets in Capricorn in the first house. It's very interesting the way this worked out. Jupiter and Sagittarius like simplicity, and Sagittarius especially is extroverted. It's one of the most extroverted signs. And so this man lived a simple life, which he lived quite contentedly and humbly. Humility coming from the Capricorn planets usually. The way his music worked is that he would take very simple themes and play them against themselves. Things did become complex, but he didn't have to have complex melodic lines and complex harmonies or things like that. He just did simple things and made them complex. Now, it is a psychological principle that's based on the same thing as the old maxim that if you let a river run, it will run itself clean. Meaning to say that if you throw a stone in a fast-flowing brook, it'll get cloudy, but as it runs, it'll become clean again. It'll be clear. And this is the kind of extroversion that we find in this kind of man. The form, the strict and rigorous forms, and the formalism come from the Capricorn planets. He was sensitive, and he could take his simple orthodox ideas and weave them into a form that had structure that was really easy to analyze. So this is somebody that unites the Jupiter and the Saturn qualities in one horoscope. This is simplification compounded without becoming overly complex. I suppose, yeah, we better move along. We're going a little too slow with these. But the next one I have to go. Does everybody know who Carolyn Meese is? In this group, I'm surprised. What? Now, Carolyn Meese, which is, I believe, the way she pronounces it, this is something that you're going to have to be wary of everything I say, because I don't like Carolyn Meese. I don't like her at all. So my views may be a little bit prejudicial. Carolyn Meese describes herself as a holistic medical intuitive. And she even goes further than that in a grand Jupiterian way. She claims her diagnoses are at least 93% accurate, which to other people, including myself, is a questionable figure. And beside, the statistical analysis should be made by somebody other than yourself. What we're talking about here is bias. Bias on my part and bias on the part of Carolyn Meese. Jupiterian people sometimes have biases. They believe that their goodness, or what they think is their goodness, is right. She has a difficult task in life. She has Sagittarius rising, and Mercury and the Sun are in Sagittarius. And they're sextile to Mars. So she's an energetic person. If you ever hear her lecture, I'd hate to be the person who runs the control board, because she can be really loud, and she speaks quite forcefully. Her task is difficult because she tries to diagnose on what she calls the spiritual origin of illness, the spiritual origin of the conditions that are. But she doesn't do much to bridge the gap between what she sees as the spiritual origin and what medical material science considers to be reality. And she runs into a lot of doubt and skepticism from people in Materia Medica. As a result, she speaks mostly only to sympathetic audiences. And in these sympathetic audiences, she builds a Jupiterian pride, a false kind of pride, and she oversteps herself. One example is, it's famous, you can find it, it's smeared all over the web. She appeared on Oprah's show. And she gave a spiritual etiology of a lupus patient. And that spiritual etiology was not bad. It wasn't very deep, but it was not bad. What happened is the materialist lupus society, who believes in medical science, as it is called, were up in arms, because their illness was being taken away from them, and it was being put on it's an autoimmune disease, and so that's what happens. People who have autoimmune diseases are in love with their diseases very often. And it was being taken away from them, and because they had sold out to material science, and they thought what she was saying, as all materialists do, they thought it was mumbo-jumbo. When this protest came up for what she said, she backed down. And she said she was misquoted, which is kind of a silly thing to do. It's what a Jupiterian person will do, because everything is videotaped. But at any rate, she backed down and apologized to the Lupus Society. And she said she was misquoted, so that's in that 3%. but this is the kind of thing that is Jupiterian. Jupiter is not a deep sign. it's positive, and she's positive, and that positivity gives courage, even if it's not very deep, even if it's not well-founded. You can't fault, you know, Jupiter's sometimes so good that it's, even when it's misapplied, it does good. Now, if you look at this chart, she has reasons for her claims to accuracy. You will never find probably another chart this accurate. If you look, Saturn and Neptune are in the same degree of Libra. And they are almost exactly sextile to Pluto, which is in the same degree of Leo. And they are both trine to the Moon, which is exactly in the same degree of Gemini. Now, there you have one, two, three sextiles and two trines, all of which are within 1 degree. And they revolve around Neptune, which is probably the source of her intuition, rather than the Uranian intuition. So she has reason, she can be very accurate, but it's the Saturn part of her that is accurate, because it's in, because Saturn is, holds everything down, Pluto holds things down, and because of the small orbs, it shows a high accuracy. But where she makes her mistakes are in the Jupiterian part. And she does something that is common to Jupiterian people, religious Jupiterian people. And it's something that happens to be a pet peeve. And that is, Jupiterian people generalize beyond the facts. There's a difference between abstraction and generalization. Abstraction is perfectly accurate, because in the abstract you have the ideal case. Generalization is fudging things. What she does, and this is something that religious people have done for centuries, not necessarily in New Agey ways, is she'll find something that is a fact, sometimes a metaphysical fact, and what she will do is she'll manufacture metaphysical connections between what is true and the way she wants to believe it to be true. For example, she saw that what the New Agers claim is that there are so and so many chakras, which relate to neural plexes in the body, and they're the etheric counterpart of the neural plexes in the body. And she counts them up, and she says, wow, that's 7. Now, what that 7 must mean something. And so what she does is she manufactures this whole big theology, how they relate to the 7 sacraments in Christianity. And what she does is, I think, utterly preposterous. But that's the kind of thing that Jupiter is likely to do. All right, enough said. I don't want to hammer at her too hard. Yes? Yes, yes. I have that in the notes here, but I didn't go into that. The Mars square Jupiter indicates a pride. And it's a pride, it's a diehard type of pride, because it's in the fixed signs. And it doesn't want to give up. And when her pride is challenged, like, you know, the fact that there wasn't something having to do with the chakras, you know, her pride was, well, that my Christianity should have everything like that in it. So, all right. Do you know Amy knows her, huh? Yes. 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 Yep. Exactly. Yes. She is, in her tapes especially, she's Mars-Jupiter. And Mars-Jupiter is, you know, the big spirit of Jupiter amplified with force. And so she, force, and she's bombastic. And she says, oh, it's tough for me. All right. G. James Earl Jones. We're now looking at the Saturnine types. Here we have Saturn itself, conjoined Mercury, and widely conjoined to the Sun. And they're all in Capricorn, as is the Ascendant. Moreover, the Saturn and the Sun are opposite to Jupiter and Pluto. It's a tough horoscope. It's a very tough horoscope. We have another child prodigy here. Mercury's in the first house, almost close enough to be considered conjoined with it. And Mercury is trine Neptune. So we can see this is somebody that can see into things mentally. Now, this is a horoscope that is remarkable for overcoming adversity, especially overcoming poverty. He was born to a really, really poor family, but it was discovered when he was in school as a little child that he wrote beautiful poetry and that he could recite beautiful poetry, whereas most of the time he was timid and stuttering and things, had all of those types of qualities. This is James Earl Jones. You see him now, you wouldn't think that was... He was sensitive. He was so sensitive that, you'd have a hard time getting him to say something. This is one of those people where the Sun and the Ascendant are the same, which means the person is the same inwardly as they are outwardly. And so the Sun, especially with conjoined to Saturn, is personally doubting. There's a lot of personal doubt in himself. The planets are in a revolving grand square because they're square to Uranus and to the two planets in the seventh house and square to the moon. This is big, big problems. The grand square is in cardinal signs, and cardinal signs are active signs, which means he can do something about it. And he actually does do something about it. Now, this is the positive side of Saturn and Capricorn. He has this keen awareness of limitation and of obstruction. He had all of the fears and doubts and insecurity and all kinds of negations, but they didn't let him slip, so that when he set to work on himself and on developing things, he wasn't building off in speculations like Carol and me, so I gotta give her one last whap. Instead, he worked very, very fundamentally. Very fundamentally. And he became a quiet, humble, confident man. He had poise and he had surety. With Saturn, when you get it, in such a way that you're not going to let it slip away from you. Because you know every step of the way what you've done, and every step of the way you've been checked because of the Saturnian qualities. The Saturn individual is always beset with limitation, and it works within limitation until it succeeds, and it appreciates the limits. Now, every planet has its tone range. Usually, Mercury and Venus are up in the higher registers. Jupiter, something like a baritone. Mars is somewhere between Jupiter and Mercury. But Saturn is the basso profundo. It's the deep sound. This is the voice of Darth Vader. It was James Earl Jones. He's got that deep, deep quality to his voice, and that gives security to people. There's something foundational about the bass pitch. You know, Bach used to have the bass pitch sustained on one note for many, many registers. So whenever the Entertainment Society or the government or anybody else wants to promote trust, All they have to do is trot out James Earl Jones and people, yeah, and they trust him. Yes, Paul Harvey's another one with that kind of voice that people trust. He says some awful schlocky things. And don't get me started taking pot shots at people. So this is an icon of Saturnian venerability, and he's worth every bit of it. All right, let's move on to the next horoscope. We'll go faster and faster here now because we're... Yes, he did. He had a stuttering, and he was halting as well as stuttering, holding back all the time. All right, this is the horoscope of Clara Barton. Does everybody know who Clara Barton is?
Yes.
All right. This is someone also who went from timidity to world-class stature. This is Clara Barton, the founder of the American Red Cross, but worked on every kind of Red Cross and relief agency in the world. She was world famous. She went everywhere. This is Saturn and Jupiter conjoined in the first house, and a whole lot of planets in the 10th house in Capricorn, Neptune, Uranus, and the Sun in a very strong conjunction, and the Moon is there also. And the Neptune, Uranus, Sun are trying to Mars in the sixth house. And so this not only indicates a strong charisma, Neptune, Mars always is charisma, and an ability to act and act quickly, as you must do with first aid, which is the Mars trine Uranus. The Mars trine Sun indicates that she was ambitious, very highly ambitious, but it's all coming from Mars in Virgo in the sixth house. So she was raised to be a servant. This is somebody who is driven to serve. This is a very driven type of person. Now, in her childhood, she was timid. She grew up in a family of idealists that were suffragettes, that were abolitionists, and whatever cause there was that was idealistic, the family was in it. She didn't always agree with the family, and they fought. And for her, being very sensitive with the Pisces rising, and all of the aspects to Uranus and Neptune, this was all very jarring and very confusing. Now, it's always beautiful to see how astrology shows things. Saturn and Jupiter are conjoined. So there is a mixture of positive idealism and insecurity and doubt at the same time. They both trine Jupiter, which show her excellent idealistic education. They're both trying to Mercury.
Okay, you said Jupiter.
Oh, I'm sorry. And but they're also square to the Moon, which indicates the familial upset, especially the mother figure again here. So beside forming the Red Cross, she was a famous teacher of first aid, nursing, everything else. And she went everywhere in the world where urgent help was needed. But like many people who have Saturn limitation, she worked and chilled till she exhausted herself. And she always left organizations. And she founded organizations because she wanted to do things her way, and she wanted to work alone. And as soon as any organization became so big that she had to cooperate with other people and accommodate to their ways of doing things, she was out. This would be too easy to say that it was only due to her 10th house ripeness to things and to her Saturnian character, but that certainly plays a very large factor. Third pattern was that she had to retire from health, and part of that is due to the Saturnian quality of the chart, and part of it is due to Mars burning itself out. She was always pressing against the limits, and she went too far for the sake of other people. The other part is that she was compassionate and sensitive, and sensitive and compassionate people are not known to have stamina. It's not, you know, they can do bursts, and that is about it. There's not very much fixed in this horoscope. I think there's only one planet in a fixed sign, so she's good for a short burst, but not something that has to be sustained. We'll hardly talk at all about the last two horoscopes. Mars in Virgo, it's a common sign, and common signs do things a little bit of this, a little bit of that, a little bit of that. And the particular thing about Mars in Virgo, it represents lurch efforts. In a male's chart, it almost always indicates, even when well aspected like this, it represents inguinal hernias. Because what happens is they strain too much, and when they strain too much, the weakest part of tissue body is in the inguinal area where things pull apart. Amy can give you a dissertation about it.
It's that jerkiness of it.
Yes. Thank you. All right. Guccio Gucci. Everybody knows who Gucci Uguchi is, right?
That's his first name.
Yeah. Yes.
Clothes or shoes or purses or something.
Yeah. When we think about Saturn, we think that in its parsimonious ways, it doesn't like to waste anything. But Saturn is a worldly planet. It rules Capricorn, which is the height of worldliness. If a person is going to be urbane, it's likely that person is likely to be Saturnine. So Capricorn knows all the details. I'm much more Jupiterian than I am Capricorn, so the Capricornian or Saturnian. So I don't notice all those details. You know, like I'm not chic. I'm not elegant. I'm not cultured. And that's what Saturn does. And that's what Guccio Gucci. And the name Gucci is brings to mind. Now, Saturn is rising just about conjunct to the ascendant in Aries. And Aries likes things bold and simple. And this is what Gucci specialized in. Something that's simple, something that's bold, but done with class, and that gives it a quality without it being gaudy. The sun is in Capricorn in the 10th house, shows that he's self-aware, and he's aware of importance and dignity. In his case, he knew what it meant to be connected to people or to associate himself with people in high places, because that would give prestige and status. This is the kind of person, you know, like, even though Saturn is a very parsimonious planet, it doesn't mean it's stingy. You know, it knows the value of giving somebody who's going to be seen a pair of your quality shoes so that they're seen with your shoes on. And your reputation is enhanced immediately. The sun is in a grand trine with Uranus and Neptune. Now, normally that is seen as something spiritual, and maybe he did have a spiritual life. I don't know much about that. It's kind of hard to get biographical information on Gucci. You know, he was basically a simple leather worker in Italy until he hit on doing what he did. But in this case, it represents a sensitivity, a great sensitivity to things of the world. And how you can make things appear really, really chic. And that's what he did. This has nothing to do with Saturn, but Mars is sextile to Venus, and this shows that he knew about
Yes. Yeah, sextile to Mercury also. Venus sextile Mars and Mercury. Get it? Yep. Okay. This indicates that he is keenly aware of sex appeal. And Gucci doesn't sell sex, but he knows that it has to be, you know, that the appeal has to do something with desire. Interesting thing. I had an opportunity, it has nothing to do with the talk at all, but it's fascinating to me. I had a chance this summer to meet a perfumist, an interesting woman. She bought a car from a friend of mine, and they rendezvoused here and made the car deal. And she was about in her 30s. She had all kinds of dogs. She was a dog person, and she was buying this car to haul her dogs around. And she liked diesel automobiles, and she did all of her own mechanical work on either Mercedes-Benz or Volkswagens or BMWs. She liked doing her work on diesels. And in talking with her, I found out that she was one of a very small class of people, maybe 20 at the most in the world. Do you know what golden ears are? Golden ears are people that can hear things that other people cannot hear. They are people that when they make sound equipment, they test the sound equipment with people with golden ears because they can hear things and they have a sense of taste that other people can't hear. Well, this woman had a golden olfactory. I would hate to say golden nose. But she has a little farm west of Chicago, and she works for this company. She has her own private lab, and she'll get a call, and she'll say, well, Gucci's putting a new line of vests on the market. Come in and look at the vests and design a perfume to go with them so that they sell well. And she'll go in the laboratory and she will concoct the perfect scent that goes along with the new Gucci vest. I was just amazed that there would be such a person like that. All right, let's look at the last horoscope. Everybody knows who Paula Poundstone is, don't you? Oh. Paula Poundstone is a comedian. I guess they call them comedians if they're female. Quite a remarkable person. She's very funny. She practices both Jupiterian and Saturnian wit. She will do overstatement, but the overstatement hinges on very pointed irony, which is the Saturnian part of it. And she made quite a career for herself. And she was alcoholic. And on an alcoholic, she went out on a binge, and she had adopted children. And she was arrested for performing lewd sex acts on little children. She really wasn't a pedophile. And it's just that she sort of got out of control with herself. That's the Mars-Jupiter-Mercury overstepping. The other part, the more piquant part, the sagacious part, is the Sun, Moon, and Saturn in a fairly tight conjunction, all being sextile to Neptune and trine to Pluto. So what we have here is a mixture of a Saturn-Jupiter type of person. This is just the opposite of Carolyn Meese. I like this person very much, even though I probably shouldn't. And it's some of the things she does are troubling to me. On the Saturn side of things, she's got that strong conjunction with the sextiles and trine. So she knows how to penetrate. Conjunctions penetrate, especially Saturnian conjunctions. She knows how to penetrate and get to the heart of something. So she can do the understatement kind of humor, and she can be ironic about it. But once she's done, with the understatement, she keeps on going and she keeps expanding and she brings in the Jupiterian part of it, which is overstatement. So on the Jupiter side of it, we have Mercury, Mars, and Jupiter are conjoined in the Jupiterian Sagittarius. And they trine Uranus. So she can exaggerate things and she can be manic in her exaggeration. And that's probably what happened with her alcoholism. Didn't know when to stop, even though she knew better from the Saturnian part of it. So she exaggerates things and she gets really zany about it all. Now this is almost schizophrenia, even though these are all sextile trine combinations, and they're strong sextile trine combinations. They're so different from each other, it's like she has two different characters. Then you throw the Uranus square Mars in it, so she has strange ideas, especially about sex. She is a lesbian and has the thing with sex with children. Uranus square Venus, yeah. Venus is at 25 of Scorpio and Uranus is at 20 of Leo. So, as far as I can tell, with her irony and with her very earthy penetration of things, she becomes world-weary. And mania isn't enough because she can see through things, but she can't see beyond in a spiritual way. She has lost her innocence. And so she looks for innocence in children. She looks for that Bonhomie innocence in a little child, which would be what Uranus and Leo would be like. So she's robbed of her own childhood, and she's robbed of childlikeness in her life. And she hungers for innocence and unfortunately took a wrong direction. She's undergone quite a correction in her life and is she's on the rise again, but I don't think she would ever be like a really renowned comedian because of that past. We're not usually very forgiving as a society.
Did she go to jail or anything for that?
I think she did, yes. And she had a very long period of probation. And on Monday, we looked at Garrison Keillor's chart. And Garrison Keillor, much to his credit, he was one of the people that stood by her and took her in, put her on the show, even when she was very much in disfavor. So we have here somebody that is, can be, a very cold, hard Saturnian type, and at the same time a detached and abstracted Jupiterian sign, but she's certainly not typical of either. So let's close with the Rosicrucian prayer, student's prayer. O God, increase our love for thee so that we may serve thee better from day to day. Let the words of our mouths and the meditation of our hearts be acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Are you going to want the